Hello, Observation Deck viewers. In this episode, it was actually recorded on a conference call about small businesses and common law and turned into a very interesting Q&A session with the admins of the Common Law Telegram group. I apologize ahead of time because you get to see me, and since this is a rare occurrence that I go on camera, so please be warned and don't let your children watch. I'm just kidding, by the way. It doesn't follow any particular format. As it turns out, I try and deal with as many questions as possible in the time frame that we had and hope some of you will find it useful. Knowing the difference between public and private, standing your ground to hold jurisdiction, and explanations of affidavits and liability in law. All of this and quite a bit more. I have also left a link to the Common Law BitChute channel in the description below, along with both links to my ebooks, which are mentioned in the conversation if you wish to help support my work and learn a little bit more about what you can do in terms of private lawful remedy. With all that being said, let's not waste any more time. I'll see you on the other side. I don't think there's enough being done for small businesses in the United Kingdom. And having saw that video of the guy with his takeaway, and I've seen quite a few since then as well, different types. I think small business owners need to be helped with the facts of the matter rather than the presumptions in law that the local bobbies are coming around saying you've got to wear a mask, you've got to do this, you've got... And it's simply not true, and people should be standing their ground without fear of recourse, because to be honest with you, if they want to put a recourse and flip it completely around, then they can always follow a personal or a private prosecution via a commercial lien. So, you know, they don't even have to get the judgment of a judge, because I don't know if you've had a chance to look at one of my books called The Lien Machine, but we take the jurisdiction away from the judge before you even step into court.
Right. You know, I've heard you speak about The Lien Machine, but I've not actually had a chance to look at it. It's on my vast reading list.
Oh, believe me. Yeah. The amount of PDFs I get sent and this, that, and the other, your head starts to explode after a while.
Yeah.
But I mean, rest assured, ladies, that myself and a few other colleagues of mine, we are working on stuff in the background. But I can assure you that based on the principles of common law and the principles, because what we tend to do, or my preference is, we've got the essence, or what I call the ethos of common law, but we're using contract and laws of equity at the same time.
Yeah.
Because unless we have the ability to stand in those, in both those worlds, they will not recognize us. And the other split, obviously, is between the private and the public.
Yeah.
And even in the court of law, you cannot mix private and public. So, you know, the judge will not hear you if you say you're a living person.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that he physically can't hear you, but he doesn't have the jurisdiction to hear you.
So you need to be in their jurisdiction to be able to fight your corners.
That's been the traditional approach. But what we've done, or what I've come up with, is we're going to flip that completely in reverse. We do not have to be in their jurisdiction. Okay. They have to be in our jurisdiction.
Right.
Because the basic principles of contract law, and it's the same with any other, the maxims of law is, look, an unrebutted affidavit becomes truth in law.
Yes.
Simple as that. And that truth in law becomes judgment. Well, if you've already set up an unrebutted affidavit, that judge is not there to preside over the case itself. He or she is simply there to stamp that piece of paper so we can send the bailiffs in.
Right.
Because they have no first-hand knowledge. And because it's an affidavit, they also have no jurisdiction. They simply have the trustee's role. That's it.
They can only sign it.
They can only sign it and stamp it. And if it's an affidavit that's not been rebutted three times with options to cure, then before you even walk in the court, you've lost your opposition has already lost the case.
Okay.
So it's no, if you think about it, it you see this repetition of three.
Yeah.
Everywhere. You know, yeah. From the three strikes and you're out from an auction where they hit the hammer three times. If you ignore a debt collector's bill or a request three times, then you're automatically in default. Well, what we're basically doing is exactly the same thing, only we're reversing it.
Okay. Mm. So we have to, when the businesses are getting the fines, we have to rebut them. We can't wait for the court summons to come and then start rebutting. No, we have to do the fines.
Because by the time you've done that, you've got an unrebutted statement.
Right, and that is tacit consent.
Exactly.
Okay.
So basically what you're doing is you're not only rebutting their statement, or in fact, I think a smart way of doing it is make them a conditional offer.
Yeah.
So you're saying, and never admit, obviously, to the original charge, as it were, but you're basically saying that the alleged charge, okay, I will be happy to sit in honour and face my accusers. Because number one, obviously, from any law's point of view, who is the person taking liability for this?
Yeah.
Because remember, you can't mix jurisdictions. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to use public fictional jurisdiction to prosecute a private person. Mm. And you can't do that, which is why they need to get you in that courtroom in their jurisdiction to admit to your fictional name.
So if you've rebutted three times and you get a summons, then... You rebut the summons and you just don't go to court, you just keep rebutting every time they write to you, even when they send you.
But what I mean personally, and again, I'm no legal expert, but I mean, I know enough to say, look, not only am I going to rebut your statement, but for your statement to be true, you have to answer these questions. So then I set them up to say, you need to rebut these. Is it true that the laws, I don't know, I'm using this off the top of my head, but things like, is it true that the act, statutes or laws or guidance that you are quoting, does that apply to a living man or woman?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they've only got to answer that word in the negative, and it's like, well, it's case dismissed then, isn't it? Yeah. Because here's my evidence that I'm a living man or woman, because it only applies to a person, and a person is a fiction.
What we're actually finding, though, Robert, is that if we send out these conditional acceptances and we state exactly that, you know, the burden of proof is on you.
Yes.
You have to prove that my legal fiction is able to do this, as it's just a piece of paper, or you have to prove that I am not a living woman. But they just ignore it. And then they send through another fine. You know, we're just finding that they're not playing by the rules.
No, well, they never will, which is why we have to take jurisdiction away from them, Trina.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's a little bit like, if you think of the principles that sit behind the debt collection agencies.
Yeah.
Okay, so a debt collection agency sends you a letter saying you owe us £10,000, whatever. All right. Now, we know that isn't worth the paper it's written on because, A, they've already settled the debt with the bank by buying it in the first place.
Yeah.
B, they've actually gone against the UN Charter anyway, because they can't actually charge you any more than they pay for it from the bank.
Right.
You know, which is about 10 pence on the pound.
Yeah.
But more importantly, they don't have what we call certificate of novation, which is a tri-party certificate signed by the bank, the debt collection agency, and the individual concerned.
Yeah.
They don't have the original wet signature in contract. So they don't have any of this stuff. So therefore, they have no valid claim.
Yeah.
So if you think of the principles that sit behind that on your first debt collection letter that you fire off to them and say, prove all this.
Yeah.
Prove that you have this valid claim. We're doing exactly the same. Now, if they ignore you, remember, They can ignore you as much as you like, but if you've written an affidavit of truth for them to rebut, if they ignore you three times, it stands as truth in law.
Okay.
Period.
So that would be the same for the land registry as well.
Absolutely. An unrebutted statement stands as truth in law. It's a maxim of law. It's not an act or a statute. A maxim, just to explain, I mean, I'm not trying to teach you to suck eggs here, ladies. But,
oh, please do.
Please carry on.
But a maxim in law is something that's been used for so long, so often by so many, it becomes universal and unarguable.
Can I ask a basic question here, Robert?
Yeah.
If you've already written an affidavit.
Yeah.
Now, for example, and let's just take a... I'm sorry, ladies, because we've been spitting nails at parking tickets. But if you wrote an affidavit, give us an example. For example, let me say the affidavit for parking ticket. The council, the electoral register for my local council have said, you can send us as many letters as you'd like. We'll read them and file them. We're not answering you back. Now, I haven't gone to the point of, I was going to in my last letter, but I didn't get round to it because I was sort of advised differently. I was going to say what law tells you you can make me a living woman and subject to this, you know, various points. Do you have various affidavits for different
circumstances? An affidavit is an umbrella term. Basically, affidavit is the legal term for statement of truth. Okay? Now, you cannot be your own witness, all right? Which is why we get witness signatures on documents and affidavits, statements of truth. So if you've got two witness signatures, and you don't even have to get a notary public either. You know, people talk about, oh, go into a notary public. No, you are a living, breathing, supreme, divine being.
Yeah.
You are the highest notary that there is. Mm. So all you need to do at the top right-hand corner is stick a stamp on it, sign across it, get red ink and stick your thumbprint on it, and you are your notary, period. So when these people say, oh, I need a notary public to sign this for me, you are the notary public. You do not need that. Someone who's sworn an oath to the Bar Society.
Yeah, I get that.
Right, so the affidavit is simply a statement of truth. Now, within that affidavit of truth, we need to learn to write our own conditions on top of that. And you also need to make it absolutely clear of the maxims of an affidavit, like an unrebutted statement three times is truth in law. I will give you an opportunity to cure. I will then send you a third one with the first copy of the affidavit called a default notice. Okay. I don't care if you ignore me, because this is stacking up to create a full set of documents that I will get a notary public to go through, stamp, take to the court, and then I will sue you.
Right.
It's that simple. Think about it this way. If you, Jane, you mentioned that, the council say, I will ignore you.
Yeah.
We will file it and ignore you. Try doing that with a debt collection agency or someone who's chasing you with a bill. Ignore them and see what happens. They end up as a summons in court.
Mm. Well, when you say sue you, would you go down the legal or the lawful?
I would always go down the lawful. If I go down the legal, remember, we're in their jurisdiction and we want them playing in our jurisdiction.
Mm. The problem with our jurisdiction is we don't have any enforcement.
Oh, yes, we do. Yes.
Oh.
This is why we, you see, this is why, although I am aware of common law, I use contract and laws of equity instead, much more powerful, and that you can recognize them, because we know that under common law, even Magna Carta 1215 subsection 38 and 61, they will ignore us.
Mm-hmm.
They will not recognize it. So you're sitting there scratching your head thinking, well, what remedy have I got?
Mm.
Well, you don't give them the opportunity to have the jurisdiction in the first place, because if you've got an unrebutted set of affidavits that have had a notary public, the only thing you've now got to do is go to the clerk of the court and say, boom, I want this case to go ahead. You get a court case number. Now, if you really want to screw the whole system over, then within your court case papers, you throw in there a Form 206 proof of life and ecclesiastical deed poll.
Yeah.
Now you've just nuked them. There is nothing they can do. They have no jurisdiction over you. And the judge's only position in that court is to act in his fiduciary duties in order to stamp that piece of paper. And now you can send the bailiffs in. Thing is, with the ecclesiastical depol and the 206, the thing is, when you file it, because they won't let you file it without a case number. I spoke to Shem, which is why she did the 206 and the ecclesiastical depol.
Yeah.
And I said, it doesn't matter, Shem. I said, the point is, if you get those on file 6 weeks later, that goes to the Supreme Court.
Right.
And it goes into what we call the master file of the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
So any court that you appear in at a later date, as long as you stand your ground and bring to evidence your depol and your form of 206.
Yeah.
And you stand your ground, they simply don't have jurisdiction.
Okay.
And even if the judge ignores it, all you've got to do is say, I'd like to see your oath.
Right.
You have no jurisdiction over anything. And if they turn around and say, I'll have you for contempt of court. Well, you can't have me for contempt of court. You haven't even established jurisdiction yet.
Yeah.
So we don't even know whose court it is until you give me the information I'm entitled to.
Right.
And if you've already presented information, especially with the Ecclesiastical Depol 206, and even an affidavit saying I'm a living, breathing person and it's been correctly notarized and all the rest of it, that's all the evidence they need. They don't have the authority to hear that case. But unfortunately, what happens is a lot of people get pressured by the courts because they're set up to do it against you. They get a lot of pressures and they make fundamental mistakes because you don't have to admit to your name in court. If I was talking to KL, the guy over in the States when I interviewed him for the channel, and we both agreed that the deadliest word that you can say in court is yes. Because you just agreed. And the moment you've done that, you've now contracted to their jurisdiction and everything you say after that is null and void on your part.
Can I go back a step?
Yes, Jane.
Do you have several affidavits, depending on the circumstances of the case or the situation that you're in? Or is there one affidavit total, that's it, done?
Right, so affidavit, as I say, is an umbrella term for statement of truth. So depending on the situation that you will have, you will have slightly different statements of truth. However, having said that, there are affidavit templates that give you the start and the end of it, as it were, just to help you, like, you know, notice to agent is notice to principal, notice to principal is notice to agent, and those bits and pieces, with a few reminders of the person that you're sending the affidavit to of the maxims of law when it comes to affidavits. Now, once you've got that, because that's going to be pretty much the same on most affidavits, and then you'll have a section that pertains specifically to what it is that you're dealing with at that time.
Okay. Yeah.
And of course, at the bottom, then you will have that affidavit signed by yourself, notarized, and used by signed by two witnesses, dated, and then notarized.
So
and that will complete your affidavit.
I'm currently working on a notice to rebut a COVID fine, and so I've got your standard, you know, your notice principle, all that malarkey, and I've got my bottom to say, you know, this is written in common English and don't make any assumptions and bloody blah. And then in the middle, I've taken the email that was going around about proof, the burden of proof is on you, prove to me that there's isolated COVID-19, prove to me this, prove to me that. So that is that the right way of doing it?
Yeah, because see, what you're asking him to do, Trina, is you need to rebut these statements.
Mm.
Okay, prove to me this, show me that. Give me evidence of this. Give me the original copy of that, not a photocopy, okay? These are all the things that they have to rebut.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then an unrebutted statement becomes truth in law.
Okay.
So think of the affidavit process as an actual court case that's taking place on paper.
Mm.
So what you would do if you were standing in a court of law itself is obviously you'd have the prosecution and you'd have the defense, and the prosecution makes an accusation at you. The defense then comes back with either a conditional acceptance or the prosecution then will have to, from the defense point of view, come back and answer our questions once they're on the stand. Now, so think of an affidavit as a paper version of you putting the prosecution, whoever that may be, who's making the claim, on the stand and saying, answer these questions. Mm. Now, if they were sitting in a court of law and they go, I refuse to answer, I refuse to answer. Well, you've only got to do it three times and it becomes truth in law.
I love that. I love that thought, because then you're coming from a position of power, aren't you?
Always come from a position of power. Mm. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I know it's not a legal term or it's not a lawful term, but I found reading The Art of War a very good lesson, because I think the only way for us out of this is to use their system against themselves.
Yeah.
And at the same time, take the jurisdiction away from them before they even get a chance to go through the door. So in your case, Jane, if the council is saying we're going to ignore you, that does not put them above the law.
Mm.
They will ignore you at their peril. Because I have taken local councils to court, okay? I've beat them into the ground. Because at the bottom line is, once you understand how much power you have as an individual, as a divine, unique creation, they have no power whatsoever, but they want to use that fear in you, that doubt in you, and that indoctrination that we've all had since the day we were born, to persuade you otherwise. I mean, think of it this way. I mean, I've dealt with people's debt collection agencies and all the rest of it, and there's an absolute nuclear weapon that nobody seems to be using with debt collection agencies.
Right.
So you might want to, you see, because people are fooled into thinking, oh my God, I got a debt collections agency off my back, I won. And they think, right, they go and celebrate. I don't have to pay them anymore, right? And they go off on their merry way and go, yeah, I beat a debt collection agency. No, you didn't. The reason that they stopped chasing you for money because they didn't have a valid claim and wouldn't take liability is because they are scared witless that you now have a remedy for what they've just done to you.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not good enough in my book for a debt collection agency to say, okay, hands up, we won't chase you anymore. Hang on a second. You've been chasing me for the last 10 years, which means you have an awful lot of my money that you don't have a right to.
Mm.
And I want that back as well.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment you get that letter from a debt collection agency saying, okay, we won't chase you, and most people go off on their merry way and go, yeah, see, I stopped them. That's only half the game. You see, when it comes to contract and equity law, I mean, there's a thing called, you might want to take a closer look. If any of you deal with debt collection agencies, when you get that final letter of them saying, okay, hands up, we're not going to chase you. And then they write this wonderful little sentence that goes, but we're not going to take liability. Well, unfortunately, that's not your choice. Mm. All right. We refuse to take liability. You can refuse until the cows come home, but you're still going to take liability, because I've got a bank account here that says I've paid you money that you've now admitted you don't have a valid claim for.
Yeah. So,
do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
If you've been paying them 5 or 10 years on a bank loan, a credit card loan, a car loan, doesn't matter what the financial reason was or how much it was. Okay, you can then turn around. Now you've got two choices. You can follow my commercial lien process and mess with them. Remember, an unrebutted affidavit is truth in law. So can they possibly rebut the statement that would you admit that you have no valid claim? Well, of course they have to, because you've now got the documented proof. Would you also admit over the last 5, 10, however many years, you have been taking money based on an invalid claim? Mm-hmm. Do you see how this works?
Yeah.
Do you have to get them into court to make that happen?
This is a wonderful thing about, that's why I wrote The Lean Machine. Most of this is done outside of the court. You don't have to stand in a dock because you've already won. And I guarantee you, 99.9% of the time, they will settle out of court, because the last thing they need is a public hearing where you've taken them down and then you've started a court record precedent.
Yeah.
Because if you've created case law and you've beat these people into the ground, they will run for the hills, and that's the last thing they want.
They don't want the publicity of it, do they?
Well, no, because they're trying to hide it. That's You see, I've had lots of people say to me, Rob, well, why haven't we heard of all of these cases of people being beaten and the banks being beaten? Because they've either gone A, settled out of court to stop that happening, or B, got you to sign a non-disclosure agreement as part of the deal.
Because the notes are fraudulent themselves.
Well, of course they are. And the thing is, they can also be done for postal fraud. They can also be done with demanding money with malices. It's not just the Bill of Exchange Act and the Consumer Credit Act and all this kind of stuff. I mean, I'm referring to debt collection agencies now. It's a whole raft of laws. And if they persist in contacting you, then you've got the 1976 Harassment Act laws. So you can whack them again for that as well, for damages.
I use that in my notice to cease harassment letters.
And until we, the only thing that's going to pull us out of this corner that the system is trying to push us in is for us to educate ourselves. And the moment you start doing that, you realize just how much power we have. You can't get a policy revenue collector dressed up as a policeman or woman knocking on your front door demanding monies with malice. They used to call those highway robbers. All they've done is just rebranded them.
If we do get them to back off using the 206 and the deed of, oh, I've written it down, ecclesiastical deed.
Yeah.
Is that, say you actually took somebody to a common law court and you got a judge in, well, a judgment in your favour. I'm not sure what it's called in the common law courts. I can't remember. But can you then take that judgment, say, for example, when Theresa May, the case that's on the common law court website, Theresa May was charged. Can you take that to a legal court and have that lodged with them?
Well, again, and here's the problem, Trina, that when you've done it in the common law court, you're doing it under the auspices or the statutes of living man and woman.
Yeah.
When you take it into theirs, it's you're now fiction. In the public fiction.
Yeah.
It's so you fiction. Can't, you're mixing jurisdictions. And therein lies the problem. Plus the fact that they're as corrupt as they could possibly be.
Anymore. Yeah.
And people need to understand. And I've got a new episode going up. I've just finished one today, but I've got another one based on canon law. And it explains the power that we have when it comes to laws, because like I said, in the art of war, you use your opposition's power against them.
Mm.
Now, the one thing that judges, lawyers of the bar and masons and all these people do is they all take an oath. And when they take this oath, I mean, for instance, I mean, I do quote the judge's oath, but the actual judge sitting up there, who's a member of the Bar Association, and the Bar Association, they have to take an oath as well, and all these other oaths, and they hold them quite dear. And if they breach those oaths, they can get disbarred or literally removed from, you know, and blackballed or blacklisted from their own profession. So what do? You take their oaths and you turn them against them. Because the very first line of their oaths is, I swear by Almighty God to uphold and then blah, 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 the laws of Queen Elizabeth II, all the rest of it. Well, now let's back up a little bit, because I broke down the oath and I said, who did they swear to? Who is the higher power they are swearing their allegiance to? Well, it's the Almighty, which tells you that ecclesiastical law is higher than the laws, the contract laws they sit in judgment of. You cannot get a higher form of law, or legal or lawful.
Yeah.
Because once you get all of contract and equity law, statutes, acts and legislations out of the way, you realize that right at the top of the tree is universal and natural law.
Yeah.
And everything else is based upon it. So rather than have a pyramid of hierarchy like this, if you invert the pyramid, you get the true shape of society. The trouble is they don't want you to have the true shape of society.
No.
That puts the people at the top. And it puts the system at the bottom where it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So we've been taught and brainwashed over these years, like, you know, the Illuminati, the all-seeing eye at the top and all the rest of it. No, it's completely the opposite way around. Because being created divine beings and having that ability from the creator puts us at the top. There's more of us.
Yeah.
And as you go down that pyramid, they have to take note of the power of the greater mass, which is us. But we've been fooled into thinking, no, actually, it's the other way around. We have to take orders from that person. Well, hang on a second. That's a flesh and blood being. And as God said, there shall be no other idol than myself. And that is still an idol. Mm. Think about it. The very word God itself is the religious version of a commercial fiction. I assume that you ladies are aware of the two versions of English. You've got the legalese, which mm-hmm. the state uses, and then we've got the English that we speak. Okay, yes. Keep that in mind as I explain. Now, as I keep saying to my wife, I have no problem with religion. I just can't stand the church.
Yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
So think of the Bible, or it doesn't necessarily have to be the Bible. It can be any religious text. Think of the religious text as what we're told. We're given one version of the religious text, and we are told this is how you interpret that text. Mm-hmm. What the judges, the Masons and everybody else gets is the true version, which is what they call the esoterical version, the hidden version. So in other words, the legalese version of the Bible. So what we're taught in Sunday school is the English. What they're taught in their private secret societies is the legalese, and we're not a part of that. For instance, a typical parable, the parable of Jesus walking on the water. Now, we're told that that's what that means. Jesus, he's the Son of God, so he can walk on the water. Can you possibly think of any other interpretation for that? Once you start thinking contract law.
Ooh.
Come on, it's a little quiz.
Ooh.
You're going to love this one.
Well, they're obviously in the ship. They're on the sea. Walking on the
water. Go on, connect the dots. Contract law, it's ship.
To do with the maritime, isn't it?
Pardon?
Is it to do with the maritime?
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's it's to Jesus do
with water
doing?
On land, on sea. And,
yes, he's walking all over maritime law.
Yeah.
So, Robert, do you know at what point that the fraud happens? Like, I've kind of figured in my mind that everybody that goes to Eton know the truth, and I wondered if maybe that's the point. So it's the old boys club and the Masons and stuff like that. But my granddad was a Mason, and he was quite high up in the Masons as well, and he never said anything about knowing all of this. It's only this year I've learned about all of, you know, the actual truth. At what point are they in on the secret?
Trina? Can I just add to that, Robert? My dad was a Mason for all of his life, and buried with a Masonic sign on the bottom of his coffin. And he was the organist for God knows how many years when he was. And I've always thought of him as being a fabulous, beautiful person. So at some level higher up, it all turns a bit dirty and horrible. Yep. That's all I wanted to add.
Yeah, the hierarchy, again, we've got this pyramidical structure in the 33rd degree Masons based on, and that was that idea of 33rd degree Masons was stolen from universal law, because we have 33 vertebrae. Okay, so it's based on the chakra system. All right, so once you get to the top vertebrae and all the rest of it, you're on the 33rd degree, which is mean you're more cerebral. You understand mind, body and spirit. So, and don't get me wrong, Jane, I quite agree with you. A lot of Masons down on the lower echelons are there because they want to work in service of the community and all the rest of it. That I have absolutely no doubt. But when you get to the upper echelons, the CEOs of major corporations, especially if you've got a turnover of a couple of million pounds on a regular basis or more, then you start getting initiated into other areas. Yeah. Of it. This is when you start moving into circles that most normal human beings wouldn't want anything to do with. And I'm not going to go into details, but this is why people are getting arrested all over the world, and the Jeffrey Epsteins of the world and all the rest of it. Because the one thing that these monsters will use is blackmail in order to put their pawns in the positions of power that they're in.
Mm.
And certain universities will have their own, how shall we put it, their own houses, like Kappa, Beta, Omega and all the rest of it. And this is where you get the Bohemian Grove people coming in. This is where you get the Skull and Bones, you know, and all the rest of it, because most of the presidents are Skull and Bones, and so is the DOD and all the rest of it. And it's the same with Boris the Bold and all the rest of it. These are all interconnected. But if you take it even further back into history, then it was the Venetians and the Jesuits that created the trade, the professional trade systems in the first place, which sat in judgment of the goldsmiths, the silversmiths, and all of these professions, and they became the professional trades. You take it even further back, and that's for the financial taxation system. You take it further back and you end up in the Teutonic Knights and the Knights Templar of Switzerland, because Switzerland was created by the Templar Knights. Yeah. And if you look at the Swiss flag, you'll see that it's actually a Templar Knight flag. If you look even more closely, you figure out where the bloodline from they came from, because these are the financial elite of the world and have been around for about 2,500 years. Well, probably longer than that, actually. Because if you pick up the Swiss flag right in the middle where it crosses and you pick it up, what do you get? You get the Pyramid of Egypt. Okay? And that tells you that you're now working on the pharaonic bloodlines. All right? If you look at all the flags in the world, the clues are there. How many flags in the world are colored red, white, and blue?
Yeah.
And the question then becomes, why are they red, white, and blue? Why pick those colors amongst all? Because you're going back to the pharaonic bloodline of the so-called elite, because Upper Egypt, remember, Egypt was two countries thousands of years ago. Upper Egypt had the red crown, Lower Egypt had the white crown, and the blue crown was the war crown of Egypt. Now what do you have? Red, white, and blue flags, and the only, the largest troop force in the world, the United Nations, guess what? They've got the blue war crown of the pharaonic bloodline. They're the only people in the field with blue hats on.
Yeah.
Clearly it's not for security, because you could spot them a mile off and shoot them.
Yeah.
So once you start looking, in order to understand where we are and what they've done to us and how to deal with the, because my, you know, my forte with friends of mine is laws of equity, laws of contract, and the financial international banking systems. And in order to understand the big picture, as it were, you've obviously got to understand the history of it. And obviously, when I first started Observation Deck, I mean, history is a passion of mine anyway. And if you look at some of the old episodes on the Observation Deck, you'll see it's all about hidden history. In fact, I actually wrote a program over 18 months ago and called it The Great Reset. And it's still up there now. And you can check the date. And it was 18 months before the World Economic Forum even made the announcement. You know, and I explained what the Great Reset was in history and what it's going to be. And I preempted the 2020 Great Reset by over 18 months for yourself. And once you've seen the history, you've then, and the thing is, you don't have to stand in angry when you get, like, even in modern times, when you get the policeman saying, put a mask on and all the rest of it. You know, you can be very polite, because you get to a point where you're comfortable in your own power. And you know that that person standing in front of you has none. They just think they have. So when you turn around and say, can you actually name the specific legislation you are referring to in order to detain me?
We're getting Section 50 thrown at us.
Section 50, what?
Antisocial behaviour.
Because they started the problem.
Yes. Yeah, it's ridiculous. When one of the business owners said to me that he got arrested for on Section 50, I said, you're joking. Did you get that on video?
Yeah, they're just making the rubbish up. I mean, they're clutching at straws.
They're scraping the barrel, aren't they?
Yeah.
They really are.
I mean, you've got wrong arrests, kidnapping, false charges, all the rest of it. And it's not a case of, and a lot of police forces now are coming out with apology letters. You know, when they've been sus, right? And people have gone, oh, well, I've got an apology. No. Just read it correctly, right? Well, it says I apologize. No, it actually says in legalese, we are guilty.
Yeah,
so use it. If you've apologized to me, you're going to pay.
So lawful remedies for all of these businesses that have been shut down, have been forced to close, etc. Is it better that we do like a whole case thing with joint businesses, or each business clag up the system individually?
There's pros and cons, I suppose, for class action and individual case law.
Yeah.
with a class action, it tends to rely solely on one example of the case.
Yeah.
Whereas the private actions, now I kind of like the private side of the action, because if you think about it, you will clog the whole system.
Yeah, that's what
because
I'm thinking.
One case of a class action law is one case.
Yeah.
10,000 cases all over the United Kingdom would bring the whole system to a halt.
And that's something we can do ourselves, isn't it? We don't need to hire expensive solicitors or anything like that.
This is why, one of the reasons that I wrote The Lean Machine is because it is a lawful template to say that if anybody does you wrong, you don't need solicitors. You don't need a judge standing in judgment. You do not need their existing judicial system. You can bring a private prosecution based on an unrebutted set of affidavits, a notice of default, and then a final notice, period. And it goes through details to say, look, obviously I don't expect people to use the templates that are in there in that detail. You've got to change them to suit yourself. But the principle remains the same, which means you can either, because it's this trick that they try and pull. It's like, well, yeah, my badge number is 2476 and it's such constabulary. No, it isn't. Okay. Because I'm not going after the constabulary because that's a fictional entity.
Yeah.
I'm going after you, your house, your property, and your livelihood.
In private capacity.
In a private capacity. I am the one bringing a claim against another living, breathing person. The judge will not ever come down on your side because I would have already won the case before we even get to the door.
So can I ask a question there, Robert, again? Regarding clogging up the whole system, we had a member today make a suggestion that has been spread about on various other Telegram groups about why don't we all go to our police stations with a, I want you to record this crime. And if we can get many people going on the same day or every day of the same day of the week or what at the same time, we could clog the system up. And it seemed to me like a really, really good way of doing it. But obviously there needs to be a coordinated process of this is what I'm reporting on this day, this week, to every police constabulary that we can do. The local police station that's in one of my council offices, you know?
Yeah.
Is there any merit in that? And, you know, how could we do it in a coordinated fashion? We've got 6,200 people on this group. You know, if we could encourage them to take a piece of paperwork to lodge it at their local police constabulary, then, you know, that might make them sort of say, well, hang on a minute, what's going on here? It's up to the question.
And this is only my opinion, Jane, but I think if you've got a group of people that are prepared to do that, that's fine. But remember, you're going to get a reduction in numbers for the fact that they're going out and you've got a lot of what I call keyboard warriors.
Right.
All right. So you're going to lose a very large percentage of people willing to do such a thing. Mm. I mean, we've seen these type of, I'll call them class action acts because that's similar to what they are anyway, that to go along. Now, I know that the papers have been served on police chief superintendents recently by an awful lot of people, even friends of mine locally. Mm. What I would do to kind of encourage a larger percentage, obviously the crime that they're reporting has got to be real, otherwise it could backfire on you anyway. But the point being is that even if you did that online, they would still have to deal with it.
Right.
They would still have to give you a crime number and all the rest of it.
Right.
And they still have to pursue it. And the chances are you'll get 5,000 out of the 6,000 rather than get maybe 500 out of the 6,000 going down to a police station.
Okay.
That would be my suggestion anyway.
Because so that they remain keyboard warriors rather than spending 2 hours out of their time getting nervous as hell and going off down to the local tap, tap, tap at the door.
Yeah, they're going to be a lot braver behind the screen than they are behind the desk with the sergeant staring at them.
Thank you, Robert. That's great.
I mean, what I've done recently, and I love playing with the Freedom of Information Act. I just love it. I do at least one a day.
I saw you put one in for the CPS. I was looking forward to getting the results.
I'm waiting for the CPS to come back on. on the numbers. I already know what some of the numbers are.
Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous. You know, the COVID Act 2020, you know, I mean, basically, they're throwing out 80 to 90% of the cases because they don't have the evidence.
Well, that was good info.
Yeah. You know, so I'm waiting to hear back from that. I also sent the CPS, the other one, was it today or yesterday? I wanted to know the difference between a person and a living man.
Wow. And
I wanted to know whether or not the Act, statutes, laws and legislations refer to a person and or a living man. I want to know why there's a specific legal difference between the two statuses. In fact, I've got my MP, and I got an email from him the day before yesterday. My questions that I sent to my MP have now been passed, because the MP can't answer them, to the Lord Chancellor. So okay. I'm waiting for the Lord Chancellor to get back to me, because I asked two simple questions. Under the Union Act 1707, it clearly states, the Act of Union 1707, it clearly states that the Act and all acts below will allow free passage to any port or internal road within the United Kingdoms of the United Union.
Yeah.
And the last part of that act, which is the second one, said, and no law subsequent to this Act of Union 1707 can repeal, revoke or removed the above act.
My MP responded to my letter that included that, saying I was being vexatious.
You were being vexatious. So that's not an answer, is it?
No. And I haven't followed it up, really, because I know she's just completely not going to, you know, I don't know how to deal with that. But anyway, yeah, I used that 1707 business.
Yeah. Well, if I'd got a reply that was vexatious, I can assure you I would have fired an email straight back.
Yeah.
Using my best legal English, and put them back on the spot again and said, you do realize that your replies are going out in public, and if this is how you treat your voting public, then it's not very looking good. Vexatious. And I would have given the definition of vexatious and then asked them to explain themselves, etc.
I mean, they want to play that game. I could still do that.
Yes, of course you can. Yeah, let's stop. Look, I mean, these people think they can get away with it. Let's not let them. They are public servants. And if you're not aware of it, ladies, you might want to remind them of the seven principles of public office. Just Google the seven principles and then point out which one they're currently breaking. And that actually carries a criminal prison sentence. So if a policeman or policewoman decides to hassle you, just have a look very carefully at the seven principles of public office, because it's up to 5 years in prison.
Okay.
All right.
He deserves it.
but that's all MPs.
What I'm trying to say, I guess, is that common law jurisdiction is great. Don't get me wrong. It's the basis of all laws. But to fight them on their own turf, you've got to go for contract law, law of equity and affidavits. I suspect that the affidavit, in my humble opinion, is one of the most powerful tools at their disposal that we do not use correctly, or we don't even use at all.
Yeah.
If you start learning that an unrebutted affidavit becomes truth in law,
yeah,
all of a sudden you wake up to the possibilities that could create for you.
Okay.
Is that at stage three that you would do an affidavit?
I tend to put a first letter in, and I kind of give it half an affidavit rebuttal statement, and if they can't make that, and then I'll give them a full affidavit the second time, referring back to the first letter.
Mm.
And then the third one, because they'll ignore you, I would put in, and I would call that a notice to cure, and give them the first affidavit again. And I would make sure that if I send those letters like registered post, then I would have that registered post reference number on the letter, so it cross-references. Ooh. So you've got to remember, because what you're doing is you're building up a trackable case. And then on the third letter, which is the default notice, and you will be sending registered, you will then fill that in before your affidavit by saying, I sent you this on this date, here's the reference. I sent you this on this date, here's the reference you ignored. This is your third and final warning. If you do not reply in 21 days, we will be seeking compensation and we will be looking at some kind of commercial liability against you within 21 days or whatever it might be. Once you've done that and they've ignored you again, if you really want to, because they're now in the, remember, what you're doing is, and people expect a reply, chances are you're not going to get one. Mm. But what they don't expect is you to have a remedy for them ignoring you.
Mm. Yeah.
Because of their sheer arrogance. Mm. Because banks, judges, councils, and everybody else are so used to ruling over the people. You know, they hung on for 18 months denying this, denying that. And I knew by the time I took them to court on a commercial lien, the very day beforehand, they made an offer. And I knew they would because they were going to lose anyway, which was fine because I went out and bought a new car. So that was cool. But, but the point I'm trying to make is that unless you start practicing and getting a lot more faith in yourself, your ability, your power and knowledge, they will continue to walk all over you.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. I think, and one of the biggest problems, and I uploaded an episode, I think it was last Friday, saying, all this lawful stuff is confusing. Well, watch this. I don't know whether you see it.
This is your lawful remedy one.
Yeah, did you see it, Vanessa?
I think I listened to it, yeah, and I've reposted it in my group.
The point being is that once for me, the easiest focus was, look, there's three areas in life if you want to attain some kind of status change and protection. And that is obviously the first one is the status, which is taking charge of your fictional character. The second one is understand the financial system and the bills of exchange and laws of contract.
Yeah.
The third one is trusts.
Yeah.
Now, if you get your head around that, you don't have to worry about acts, legislations, or any of that stuff, because what you're doing is you're creating a suit of armor in every direction to stand your ground against any of that, and you've protected all of your assets. And if you understand the bills of exchange well enough, then you can start acting and thinking in the private, not the public, and create your own bills of exchange via a promissory note.
But the language is so difficult to understand, Robert.
I agree, Jane, it is. I mean, it took me quite a while to start getting my head around stuff. And all of a sudden, sooner or later, one day, all of a sudden, the jigsaw puzzle started to click into place more and more, where now I can articulate to a certain degree. And don't get me wrong, there are people out there that are far more up on this than I am. I've been doing it in a very short period of time compared to other people. But what you end up finding is that if you're distracted by individual areas, like, I don't know, council tax, all my electricity bills, someone after me for a car loan. Look, just put them to one side for a second, because in the grand scheme of things, they're not important. Indeed. What is important is, do you know how to protect your assets and yourself against tyranny? Mm. Can you set up your own private trust? And do you know the rules on the bills of exchange? If you figure those out, you'll never have to worry about a utility bill.
Okay.
It's irrelevant.
So, Robert, sorry, I've got three questions, if you don't mind. So I'm kind of, I'm happy with the status. We're getting to grips with the understanding how the financial system works and the contracts. Trust, I've no idea, which I'm happy that you've given me a real good pointer on that one. But when it comes to understanding contracts and that, how do you feel about learning passe syntax and is that unnecessary?
The David Wynne Miller stuff, and I'm in touch with people that are still doing it, and all well and good, but here's the thing again, it's just my opinion, but it's a distraction. At the end of the day, parse syntax what David Wynne Miller originally came up with, I mean, the guy was an absolute genius, I can't take that away from him, but we operate in a plain language system. And we know about Roman law, we know about the legalese that they use, and we also know about the diminutive lettering on the capital letters and all the rest of it. As far as that is concerned, as long as you know how to put your autograph correctly,
yeah,
And you know, if you're going to use caps, where you're using it. As far as parse syntax is concerned, I personally think it's a rabbit hole that we don't need to go down.
Okay. So really the basics, just enough to get us by. But right now we need to focus on trusts.
Yeah. You've got your status. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Knowing the difference between public and private and when to step in and out of them.
Yeah.
And it's not about getting rid of your straw man or your fictional character.
No,
it's about controlling it.
Using it when you need to.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Which is why, and I mean, I think sometimes people go, oh, so you don't like common law. No, it's got nothing to do with I don't like common law. It doesn't have the teeth that laws of equity and contract law in this present world.
Does, yeah.
So we have to fight fire with fire, because I have yet to come across a class action common law suit that the authorities have actually taken any notice of.
Yeah.
And that should tell us something.
That was something I was worried about, was the fact that there is no follow-up to it, to common law. I absolutely love it. I love the simplicity of it, but there's no enforcement. It kind of stops.
Exactly.
At that point. Like
contract law.
Yeah.
And the commercial lien system.
Yeah.
Is what they will recognise.
Well, that kind of. Vanessa. Go on.
I was going to ask, is that why Michael O'Bernessy is taking out the private case?
Prosecution.
Yeah. Because and he's used the same principles as the commercial lien. He's taking out a private prosecution. Mm. Not he's remember, he's not suing the office.
No.
He's not suing the government. These are fictional entities. He's suing the person.
Person, yeah.
And there's no escape.
So my second question, Robert, your Lean Machine, which I've heard about before, is that a book or a video or?
Yeah, it's an ebook that I created towards the I think it was beginning of the year. I'm on my third one at the moment, because so far this year I did the Lean Machine. I did another one on laws of contract called Laws of Liberty. And the third one that I'm in the middle of writing at the moment is basically how to nuke a debt collection agency.
So do we need to do all of them to understand it fully?
No.
Just the Lean Machine.
The one we've been talking about, the Lean Machine, is probably the best one.
And where do we buy that?
If you go to, hang on a minute, I'll give you the link. Yeah. Right, so if you go to that link there, I've just put up there, that will show you the books that I've written so far, and the Lean Machine is on the top rows. That's what the whole system's designed for, is to distract you. You need status, you need trust, you need to understand the financial system. Once you have those three, you have that, what I call the holy trinity of freedom.
Yes.
Now you're in command, you are a sovereign being created in the divine image. That's it. Fantastic. No one can trespass against you without retribution.
Wonderful. That's absolutely perfect.
And I think once you're confident in yourself, you don't need to confront the police or anything like that. You just stand in your own skin and you talk with confidence. That's all.
Yeah.
Now, after a war, we're after a conversation whereby you will stand your ground. That's it.
Yeah.
So, can I just ask, the Lean Machine book, is that going to teach me everything I need to know about creating a lien or lean and things
One
like
book,
that?
Debbie, will never teach you everything you need to know. I mean, that's a big ask, but it will definitely give you a very good starting point. And then, there are templates in there for you to play with.
I think that's the most valuable thing, is the templates. It's obviously the understanding, but having that basis as well.
I mean, I think it's about 30 or 40 pages, but it explains. I do explain it. I don't just put the templates in there, the process, what it means. And even though in some places it might be slightly Americanized, the principles remain the same. Doesn't matter which side of the pond you're on.
Thank
you for this, Robert. Honestly, it's been a brilliant
thank you.
It's been wonderful.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Thank you.
Just subscribe to the Observation Deck.
And, yeah, I love it.